This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Your official station to talk New York Rangers. Yeah! The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Inside the 10 o'clock hour on the Fan. Shout out to PB. He just made me laugh with the 10 days. Does not get you familiar with New York City. No, it doesn't. You got to get lost. You got to end up somewhere in Queens, somewhere in the Bronx, somewhere in Brooklyn. Take the train too far. Somebody's got to try and sell you something. You got to follow somebody. You got to follow a stranger somewhere in New York before you actually figure it out. Keith McPherson on the Fan in here watching the Devils game. That's another thing PB just said. He's like, you really do like the Devils. You're watching this and not the NBA Cup. I'm like, bro, I can't get into the Cup. I don't care. I do not care. I hate watching Giannis play. I don't care about OKC, SGA and his bra. I'm just not. I'm like, I'd much rather watch the Devils here get another goal in the third period, shut out the Blues, give me my 2 points. Is that another goal as we speak? It is. Hey, you know, I called that. You know, it's just, you know, sometimes it's like not an announcer's jinx. It's just, I always say universe never unconnects. I was waiting for that third goal in the third period. Devils go up 3-0. Woo! 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 They're like that, bro. And this is a night where you get goals from Andre Palat, Stefan Nosin, Brendan Dillon. I like what I'm seeing. I'm not mad at it. That was a dirty goal. He caught the puck, dropped it down, fired it in. Yeah, we're talking puck two on the Fan. 888-808-1019. Let's take a couple calls before we go get Dan Duggan. Colin out on Staten Island. What's up? You got it.
Yeah. What's up, Keith?
What's up?
I was just wondering, if the Mets don't get Alonso, who's playing first base on opening day for the Mets this year?
Who's going
to go? I don't know. Mark Vientos? I don't really like that idea to move Vientos from third base. I thought he was serviceable. Maybe they go with another guy that they could trade for or potentially sign, but I think he's coming back. Like, I just don't see a world where Pete Alonso signs with the Yankees. I don't see him going across country to play for the Angels. I don't think the Cubs get him either. I just think that Steve Cohen showed you he has the money, and Pete Alonso has told you time and time again this is where he wants to be. I think they come to an agreement. I think he's your Mets first baseman for the next, I don't know, they want a shorter-term deal, 4 years. 5 years, Pete Bye ain't going to get that 7 years, and that's okay. He's represented by Boris, and he went out to get Boris. So Boris got a great relationship with Steve Cohen right now. Get it done. 888-808-1019. Eric in Massapequa was next up on the Fan. What's up, Eric?
Hey, what's up, man? So I called up the night that Soto signed. I spoke to Ricky. I'd like to consider myself an unbiased Yankee fan. And I said to him, I'm not mad because I thought the money was nuts and the Yankees can use it in other places. Never in a million years. I've pulled a BT show a lot, really crushing Cashman. Never in a million years that I think he'd be wheeling and dealing the way he has been this offseason. This is one of the best offseasons he's had, and supposedly they're still in the market for Walker. If they get Walker, you give me Christian Walker, Devin Williams, Max Reed, and Bellinger over Soto 100 out of 100 times.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to say that, and people are going to be like, oh, you're crazy. But no, that's not crazy. This team struggled with Soto last year. They got swept.
To it. I said it the night he signed. I called up Ricky, and I was like, Ricky, I'm not mad. That's so much money for this guy.
Yeah, but that's what he commands at 26 years old with his resume and his presence. And
it's wild. Good
for the Mets. Thanks for the call, Eric. But I'll say this, yeah. Like, you can call it a blessing in disguise. I've been saying seeing the forest through the trees. You know, Cashman is motivated. Like, go back to 82-80, fire Cashman, and all the fans saying Cashman's got to go. And Cashman's like, no, I'm not leaving my post. I'm not going out like that. Then he gets back to the World Series, and he gets the smell of the World Series in his nose, and the team folds the way that they fold. And there were so many different mistakes, not just the fifth inning, not just game five. There were so many different things that I'm sure were driving him nuts. And so now, right, the fans saying, you got to re-sign Soto. Re-sign Soto. Oh, I'm not going to be a Yankee fan if you don't re-sign Soto. They tried. And they probably went a lot further. How? Went a lot further than Brian Cashman was ever willing to go. Like, hey, hold on. I know I was on the Fan telling you guys, it shouldn't take $800 million. That's ridiculous. It did. It took about $805 million. And so now, like I said, Hal went to sleep that night and said, we did all we could do. I'm going to bed. And Cashman didn't sleep that night. Cashman started plotting. He said, oh, yes. Like, our fans can't be mad at us for going the distance and contractually, technically, coming up $5 million short and a year longer. But now this gives me the room to operate the way I want to operate with this World Series team. The way I want to move. I can go sign who I feel like is the best pitcher on the free agent market. I can go make the trades. He said he'd been checking on Devin Williams for years. Multiple years he's been checking on him. And you know they were checking on Cody Bellinger with the Cubs for years. 888-808-1019. Eli in Orange County, you're on the Fan.
Hello.
Hello, Eli.
How are you, Keith?
I'm good, man.
Hey, crazy trade, crazy trade.
Hey, I'll take it. We knew it was coming, but for Cody Poteet? Cody for Cody? Deal.
Yeah, Cody for Cody, and I don't even care, as the other caller just said, I don't even care about giving up Soto for all these stuff. Like, all the Mets fans are telling me, yo, yeah, whatever, if we got Soto, like, especially Joe in Gardnerville. But, like, I don't even care.
You shouldn't care. Thanks for the call, Eli. What I opened up saying is, yo, Mets fans, y'all got it, man. Leave us alone, yo. Y'all got it. We understand. You won. You got Soto. How long do you got to have a victory lap? Like, how long do you have to have a parade on? Let us enjoy the team we're building. Let us enjoy the new three players we got and the players that we've subtracted. Clay Holmes on your team now. I never want to see him throw a pitch for the Yankees again. Shout out to my boy Nestor, but we improved the rotation. Devin Williams is our closer now. Rizzo is gone. Judge doesn't have to play center field. You can move him back to right. Cody Bellinger is here. Who else are they going to get? I'm enjoying this. Let us enjoy things. We let you enjoy Soto for the week. Let us enjoy what we're doing right now. You figure out who's going to pitch. You figure out what you're going to pay Pete Alonso or Sean Manaea or who David Stearns is going to trade for. 888-808-1019. We got a break. We got to go get Dan Duggan from The Athletic, who covers your New York football Giants. I'm going to ask him a couple questions about the Giants and what he thinks as the season is wasting away. And as, I mean, they are absolutely a whole tank, and they should be.
They should be, because there's only one thing left to do here, and that's get a quarterback. We'll talk to him about it. If you're on hold, stay on hold. You'll be the first that I go to when we come back. Quick conversation with Dan Duggan, and then plenty of show left till 12. KM to AM returns right after this.
Talk about your favorite teams on The Fan. Call 888-808-1019. Anytime. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream every NFL on CBS playoff game. Live on Paramount Plus.
Okay, joining us right now from The Athletic, senior writer covering your New York football Giants. I've had this guy on a few times. It's Dan Duggan. What's up, Danny D?
Hey, how you doing, Keith?
I'm good, man. I'm just trying to, you know, laugh this season off, just trying to have a little fun, man. I mean, this morning your tweet caught my attention. And shout out to, you know, the Talking Giants guys. I guess, can you enlighten us on the New York Giants reaching out to them? I guess they're trying to do some damage control after Talking Giants had a podcast out about firing the GM, Joe Shane.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak too much. And like, I know as much as you do from seeing it. But, yeah, apparently Bobby Skinner from Talking Giants put out this long video explaining why Joe Shane should get fired. And then according to, you know, what he said on his podcast, Giants PR reached out and basically, I don't even know how to describe it. I guess they basically just said, like, all right, that's like, we're not doing you any favors if you're going to put stuff out like that, I guess. I don't know. It was odd to me. Cause I watched, you know, I hadn't even watched the video. It's like 38 minutes. I was like, I gotta get that at some point, but then maybe go watch it. And I watched like the first 15 minutes and it felt very like fair and balanced. I'm not even sure why. It wasn't like something that crossed any lines or was disrespectful or unprofessional. So, I don't even really understand why that would ruffle feathers. I mean, plenty of people have called for these guys' jobs in the last couple of weeks. So, but yeah, so my tweet this morning was just kind of like when I saw that kind of controversy bubbling before I even, you know, barely, you know, opened my eyes. I was like, oh boy, it's gonna be one of those days. And you see the New York Post back page kind of greasing the skids for keeping Shane and firing Dable. So again, I just knew Giants Twitter was going to be kind of in a frenzy today. And, I think I was proven correct. It's been an active day on social media with Giants fans.
Yeah, it was. You know, shout out to those guys. Shout out to Justin Penick, Jersey guy, Jersey City, St. Peter's prep guy, diehard Giants fan, season ticket holder, going to all of these miserable games, sitting through them. This is what fans do, though. And we're in this time of fan media. I used to work with those guys at John Boy Media in their very early days. I did some things to even help them, and they're huge now. And they are the voice of Giants fans. And for the Giants to reach out to them, I don't think it really helps the Giants to try and tell them anything. But here we are. Nothing. There's no help for anything. Nothing is good right now. And then we get this news tonight of Michael Penix Jr. getting the start for the Falcons and Kirk Cousins being benched, which I felt like was inevitable. They just had a four-game losing streak, and then they barely beat the Raiders. Like, if the Raiders actually came back and were able to do something and beat them, this would have been a foregone conclusion, but it was anyway. So two questions for you. First, do you think that there's any chance that Kirk Cousins could be the quarterback for the Giants next year, which I'm sure some people are entertaining? And then also, do you think it hurts Shane and Dable that if Michael Penix Jr. comes here, a guy that they passed on in the draft, or not comes here, if his debut game in Atlanta against the Giants, if he puts up 300 yards and three touchdowns, a guy that they talked to, and you just heard Brian Dable talk about, like, it doesn't help their case if a quarterback that they passed on balls on them. So do you think Kirk Cousins could be the future quarterback of the Giants, and do you think this hurts their case to return if Michael Penix Jr. has a great first game?
Yeah, so as far as the Cousins part of that, I mean, listen, you have to first determine if he's shot, because, like, watching him last night, and obviously you've seen the numbers, it looks like it. But then all of a sudden, I did watch that game, more than 2 months ago, which was for 500 yards and four touchdowns. So, like, I don't know what the hell's going on there with him. But, you know, he's got a $27.5 million salary if a team was to trade for him next year. Like, that's not a crazy amount of money if you're getting the Minnesota version of Kirk Cousins. I think maybe one thing we need to start doing is not underestimating the toll of a torn Achilles on the 35-plus-year-old, yep, you know, professional athlete. You know, with Rodgers, you know, with him. So who knows? I mean, that's hard to say. I would say he would be an attractive bridge option at that salary if you have any, you know, conviction that he can play at that level again. But I don't know for the Giants, because if you're talking about having the first or second pick, I don't think you need to shop, like, a high-end bridge quarterback. He would make sense if somehow the Giants, you know, end up with the sixth pick, which I know no fan wants to even consider, or one of these other teams that needs a quarterback but isn't going to be in striking distance to get one of these top two guys, and you're kind of stuck, you know, without really an option, then maybe you trade for a guy like Cousins. But again, you know, $27.5 million is not nothing, but when you can just kind of look at the big picture of, you know, quarterback salaries, it's reasonable, again, if he's going to play at a relatively high level. It's you know, kind of a bargain, which is amazing to say when you're talking about that figure. And then to your second point about Penix, I mean, listen, it's almost, it feels like a lose-lose for the Giants in a sense here, because, you know, if they went out there and just lost to Kirk Cousins, like, no one really bats an eye. This game has no juice at all when it was Kirk Cousins against the Giants. And honestly, if you're looking big picture, a loss is the best thing because it, you know, helps their draft stock. Now with Penix, it just adds a dynamic that, again, I don't think benefits the Giants either way, because if Penix was out and, you know, his first career start, dices him up for 350 yards and four touchdowns, you know, which is entirely possible when you look at the state of the Giants secondary right now, then that's going to, you know, cause a lot of, you know, criticism or second guessing the idea just to pass on this guy. Like, look at your quarterback situation, and you could have had a guy doing that. But then on the other hand, it's a rookie making his first start. If he goes out there and is throwing pick sixes or, you know, some crazy things happen and the Giants win the game, okay, they get the last lap on not taking Penix for a week, but also you then drop to like sixth or seventh in the draft order. So like, that's where I look at it. It's kind of a lose-lose.
Another lose-lose situation.
Which is kind of fitting for where this team is at, lose-lose. That's kind of all they've been doing.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Dan Duggan on the Fan with us from The Athletic covering the Giants. I mean, I've been talking about this for years now. They didn't tank correctly last year. Then they come into this year, and I feel like everything was just not handled right. You draft a receiver for Daniel Jones, but we all knew we were going to get to the point where the injury clause in his contract was something that they were not going to play around with. And going into the bye week, they should have made the decision and should have let it be known and probably should have told Tommy DeVito, hey, you're going to start against the Bucs. And I feel like they fumbled that whole thing, and then that hurts the locker room. The Nick McCloud thing hurts the locker room. So not only do you lose guys to injuries, you lose some guys to just morale and vibe and not wanting to go out there and play. And a tank is a tank is a tank. Now, they're looking at drafting Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward. And there's one school of thought that you have to keep this GM, you have to keep this head coach, and they have to get a chance to draft their quarterback. And I think they will get a chance to draft one of Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. But then there's another school of thought that they should absolutely fire these guys because this is all-time bad. Where do you think John Mara is leading? I will say that I think he's going to keep him. He said he's practicing patience. He hasn't been that great in the past making picks and selections. And, like, this is the last stage, right? They have to get their own guy. Daniel Jones was never their guy. They have to get their own quarterback. What are you thinking? You think something could change here the rest of the year? You thinking John Mara is going to stick with what he has?
Well, it's interesting because you present two options that are both kind of like absolutes, like we're bringing them both back or we're getting rid of both of them. You didn't touch on door number three, which I think splitting might be the way they end up going, which I think is the worst option of all of them. I think if you're going to make a decision, you got to just get the head coach and the GM and the quarterback on the same timeline. So if that's bringing them back, which to me, that'd be a little hard to justify doing based on just how bad the situation has become. But at least if you say, like, to the point you made that they haven't had a chance to draft their quarterback, and we could quibble, like, they kind of did make a commitment to a quarterback, but that's, you know, that's neither here nor there. The Daniel Jones book is, the chapter's been closed. But you can say, all right, we're going to give Dable a chance to groom a quarterback. Then I think you make like a 2-year commitment, even though it's been really bad these last 2 years, and, you know, probably not going to have a huge jump to be like a Super Bowl contender in year one with a rookie quarterback. I think you can safely say that. But you say it's a 2-year deal. We're going to give these guys 5 years, have a chance to grow with their quarterback. You can make that case. Again, I can't really get there, but I at least see the logic in it. The other one is kind of the more obvious one to me, is you just clean house. Like, you're going in the wrong direction. We're 3 years in. The product on the field is as bad as it's ever been. They're going to set records for losing streaks and, you know, worst season, all that at home, you know, going winless at home, all of that. So that way, just start clean. Like, you bring in a GM with fresh eyes on the whole situation. You're bringing a coach. They're not going to feel pressured to take one of those quarterbacks. Let's say they have the second pick and they don't love one or both of these quarterbacks, Sanders and Ward. Joshua's going to take one. Like, he has to. He cannot come back here and say, you know, I didn't love a quarterback. Again, you're going to go four drafts without taking a quarterback. It's impossible. Whereas if you bring another GM in, he might look at it and say, listen, I can take Travis Hunter, or I can trade back and accumulate picks for 2026, whatever it may be. He has that flexibility, because if he goes 4-13 in year one, he's not getting fired. if Joe Shane goes 4-13 in year four, especially without taking a quarterback, which again I think is impossible, then his seat is scorching hot. So I mean, you obviously can tell my answer, which way I think they should go, is just clean house. But I do really think the worst option would be splitting the baby and firing Dable, but then keeping Shane, because now you're gonna have the head coaching search is gonna be messy. Like, you know, a head coach is gonna have to come in knowing that the GM's on a different timeline, knowing you're kind of forced to take a quarterback. And then what happens again? You go 4-13 next year, let's just say, and then what, do we fire Shane? You bring in a new GM who didn't hire the coach, didn't draft the quarterback. Like, the Giants have done that. They did it with, you know, Jerry Reese and Tom Coughlin. They did it with Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur. It didn't work either time. You end up firing the GM within 2 years, and the coach, you know, the succeeding coach, it flops. Like, it's kind of all or nothing to me, so I think it's crazy that we might end up somewhere in the middle here.
Yeah, and I think it's backwards to fire Dable. I've seen him be a good coach. I've seen him talk X's and O's. I've seen him fire guys up. I've seen him, you know, surprise us with the first year he won Coach of the Year. And even earlier in the season, going and beating the Browns, beating the Seahawks earlier in the year, I'm like, okay, this guy's coaching. Like, this guy is working with nothing. He's making something out of nothing. He's getting more with less. But I can't look at Joe Shane and look at his past drafts and some of the guys that he's missed on and be like, okay, yeah, this guy's, you know, the guy you keep. I think that's backwards. So I think if one's got to go, they both got to go. My next question for you is, you know, like some of these guys that he drafted, from Evan Neal to Kayvon to Wandale to Deontay Banks and Jalin Hyatt, the list goes on. I know he hit on some picks this year. Tyrone Tracy, Theo Johnson, Tyler Newbin, Drew Phillips, obviously Malik Nabers. But where are we in, like, the total assessment of his drafting and his picks? Like, they're going to have to make decisions on some of these guys. Some of these guys are complete busts and misses. Some of these guys, yeah, played for this team this year, but it's the worst team in the NFL.
Yeah, well, it's also funny, too, because a lot of times you'll hear when a draft class isn't really developing, it's like, you can't judge a draft class until we're 3 years in. But then when it looks good early, like this year, like 8 games in, it was like, this is the best draft class ever, you know? So it's like it kind of cuts both ways on that. But, yeah, you look at those first two classes, which we do have, you know, more of a book on, very underwhelming, you know, some flat-out busts, even some of the guys who are, you know, playing a lot and showing flashes, I'd say overall been disappointing. You know, like Kayvon Thibodeau, like, he's an okay player. He's not giving you what you were hoping with number 5 overall pick. And then obviously you have guys like Evan Neal is just an outright bust. And, you know, the class last year with, you know, Banks took a step back this year. Jalin Hyatt's done absolutely nothing this year. John Michael Schmitz, I mean, I think he's a below average center. You're talking, so that's your first 3 picks there. And there's just nothing there to build on. I do think, I mean, again, I think you can at least evaluate that this 24 class looks promising early for sure. And I think there are pieces that we can probably definitively say, like Malik Nabers is certainly a good NFL player and has a feeling of being, you know, a Pro Bowl level guy. Tyrone Tracy, I mean, that's the whole idea of, like, not paying Saquon is you can find a guy like Tyrone Tracy in the 5th round. Seems like they have found that, you know, that late round running back who's going to be cheap for a rookie contract. You get good value there. The other guys, I do think there's a little bit to what you're saying. It's like, well, just because guys are playing a lot, it's like, that really is more condemning of the job you've built. Like, every 4th round pick shouldn't be coming in being your tight end number 1, or, you know, a rookie safety has to play every snap because you're letting Xavier McKinney go and that position was, you know, at a glaring hole and you have to fill it with a rookie. So I think those guys showed some promise, but, like, I'm not ready to say, like, this draft class is, you know, going to be what fuels the Super Bowl, you know, contender for years, because, like, you know, I think the two guys, Tracy and Nabers, look like they have that maybe star potential. The other guys, I think they've shown flashes of promise, but I haven't seen enough to declare, like, oh, wow, they just knocked this draft out of the park.
Yeah, you mentioned Xavier McKinney, and that gets stacked against them as well. The Giants that you had here that won a playoff game, you know, and even before that, you let these guys go. Xavier McKinney, Julian Love, Leonard Williams, Saquon Barkley. Like, there's so many of these guys that were part of the fabric of that locker room, leaders. Like, they had 10 captains 2 years ago. And half of those guys, they moved on from. So, like, that gets stacked against the GM as well. Where are the leaders in the clubhouse now? Like, are they about to run Tim Boyle out there? Or is it pointing to Tim Boyle getting the start this Sunday?
I think I would say yes at this point. I mean, Tommy DeVito's going to be in the concussion protocol all week. So, you know, he's ideally, yeah, it would even be clear that that's, you know, that's Friday afternoon. Like, maybe if it was, you know, let's just say Daniel Jones, I know there's been times where he's had a concussion and started that week, but that's a guy who had a lot of experience and reps and everything.
Yeah, he's got to practice.
Like, are you, are you going to have Tommy DeVito not practice all week and then go out there and play? Like, that would be a little dicey. I guess the only question, we don't know exactly where Drew Locke is at. I mean, he was in a walking boot at this time last week. Seeing him on the field on Sunday, he really, you know, he's dressed as the third emergency guy, and they kind of had to at least warm up a little bit at halftime when he became the number two once DeVito was out, but didn't look like he's, like, you know, 100% was, you know, ready to play last week. So I don't know where he's at. So, I mean, if he's not physically ready, we should have that answer tomorrow when they take the practice field. Then, yeah, it becomes Tim Boyle, the guy who, you know, will be the fourth starter in, what, 5-6 weeks here, which is just remarkable how quickly this thing is just, you know, it was bad when Daniel Jones was starting, but, man, it has devolved to depths they never even could have foreseen, I'm sure, with the injuries and the poor play. But, yeah, so I think it could be Tim Boyle starting, which, you know, I think, you know, most Giants fans probably had never heard the name 6 weeks ago, and now he's going to be the starting quarterback potentially on Sunday.
And good for Tim Boyle figuring out how to, you know, continue to stay in the league and get checks. And he got them into the end zone last week. I know I needed for Malik Nabers in the second round of the fantasy playoffs for them two to hook up again. But I'm here. This is where I'm at. Like, Ben McAdoo to Pat Shurmur to Joe Judge to now Brian Daboll. It got to the worst record. It got to, you know, this rock bottom. But, you know, 2 years ago, you saw Brian Daboll coach up a team and get a playoff win. I think they have to stick with him. I think they have to stick with Shane, and they have to draft a quarterback, because that's just a better plan than, all right, we're going to blow this up, and then are they going to hire the 33rd team like the Jets, and they come in and help them find the next GM and head coach? Like, I don't think they're going to do that. So my last question for you is, okay, the Holy Trinity gets completed. That's what I've been calling it. Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, and all this talk about them coming from Buffalo and what they did drafting and developing Josh Allen. Well, let's see if it can happen. It didn't happen with Daniel Jones. He regressed. Which way are you going? Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward? I mean, right now it's lining up where they might not get that first pick, and Shedeur might be a Raider. For what my money's worth, I've been saying that Cam Ward, the person, the personality, the arm talent, the experience, I think he's a better guy for Brian Daboll to mold into this quarterback of the future, and they can sign a Jameis Winston or, I don't know, a Joe Flacco or a Carson Wentz or one of these random guys to be a little bit of a bridge till that kid is ready.
So where am I at right now? Man, I always say I'm not a scout, so it's and I don't watch a ton of college football during the season. I got to confess that too, because Saturday is either family day or travel day. So I always kind of defer to my guy, Dane Brugge at The Athletic, who kills it with all, you know, he lives this stuff 365 days a year. I do like a cram session, you know, around the combine, then you have to get into it for those last like 2 or 3 months. But I mean, he did his mock draft recently, and he had Cam Ward ahead of Shedeur Sanders. So I'm going to ride with Dane. If he thinks Cam Ward is the better prospect, I'll go with him. But I honestly just couldn't even tell you anything with any sort of authority at this stage of the game. But it's just like, you know, I think as we're talking about this whole idea, is like, I just feel like they're going to be forced to take one of these two guys. And that might not be a bad thing. I have no idea. Again, as I'm saying, I don't know if they're going to be stars, they're going to be flops. I don't know. But it just kind of feels like all the stars are aligned, obviously, but they just kind of need to take a quarterback, especially if Shane and Daboll are back. They're certainly destined, it seems like, for, if not the number one pick, the number two. So you obviously get one of the two guys there. So that might make the decision for them, because obviously you're picking second and the Raiders picking first. You're just taking whoever's there. But it'd be fascinating if they do have the number one pick, because, you know, whatever they are on the field, Shedeur Sanders brings a lot off the field. And we're kind of go against type with the Giants of like one of these really buttoned up quarterbacks. And I mean, he'd be bringing his whole production team and filming everything. So it'd be certainly interesting to cover from my perspective, but it'd be interesting to see how comfortable the Giants would be with everything that comes with a guy like that. So I don't know. It's gonna be a fascinating 4 months, and I know I like gave you a lame answer there because I'm not up to speed on these guys yet. But trust me, I'll become intimately knowledgeable about these guys when we do this again in April. I'll be able to tell you, like, you know, their middle names and their birthday and stuff like that. But I'm not there yet.
Yeah, no, not a lame answer at all. I understand the answer. I just think it's a safer bet to not go with Shedeur Sanders and bring on, I don't want to call it a circus, but it is a full production with his brother Bucky always handling the camera work and social media. His other brother Shiloh is trying to get drafted. And then Dion, who is, you know, a huge name in the sport that's going to still coach at Colorado, but you know he's going to be hovering over watching his son. And when I look at Shedeur, I'm like, his dad has been his coach all through high school, all through both stops at Jackson State and Colorado, and now he's going to come into the NFL. Man, just draft Cam Ward. I just think they can't afford to play around with that. And it might just line up anyway where they're the number two pick and he's there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's probably their ideal situation. Just get the second pick. Let Shador go to the Raiders. They can take Cam Ward. They never have to have the situation where, like, how could you pass on Shador if he becomes, you know, some superstar quarterback? But, yeah, I mean, it's funny. You think even the fact that we have that clip of Shador Sanders playing catch with Malik Neighbors and, you know, outside the Jeweler in Manhattan the other night. Like, that stuff you weren't getting when, like, Daniel Jones was coming on the draft and Eli Manning. A very different experience with a guy like that who kind of is like almost like living a reality show. He's got his podcast, all this stuff. So,
yep. Legendary.
It will be a very different,
prime
very
time.
Different experience.
Yeah. Dan, you're the man. Thanks for joining us tonight. Appreciate it, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a good one.
888-808-1019. Yeah, the whole thing. Like, I follow all of this. I've been following Shador since he was a high school kid about to commit. Deion, Bucky, and Shiloh, all of them. It is a lot where, like, the other side of the coin is, okay, New York's not going to be too big for him. Okay, you know, getting millions of dollars handed to him, he's already got millions of dollars. It's not going to be life-changing for the kid. The kid's just going to play football. But I just think there's a lot more that comes along with Shador Sanders than it comes along with Cam Ward. Cam Ward was also here for the Heisman. You didn't see him meeting up with Malik Neighbors to film a video of them throwing the ball in the street. Cam Ward is the dog, though, and he's got that mentality that he's the best, and he talks the talk and walks the walk. And, you know, I think he's going to be right there for him. And a lot of people are going to grade him as the number one quarterback, but I think because the Raiders have Tom Brady in the ownership, if they stay with Antonio Pierce as the head coach, I don't know why they would, but if they stay with him as the head coach, he's going to lean to Deion. And just the proximity of Vegas to Denver, Colorado, and Boulder, Colorado, it just makes a lot of sense there. So I'm trying to pull up the quote from Cam Ward, and I like this quote because he basically said, and I'll read it exactly before we go to break, call up now, 888-808-1019. You guys will get the rest of the show, open mic time, once we get to the 11 o'clock hour, and I'll do a Casamigos big shot of the night as the Devils take a 4-1 lead over the Blues with 2 minutes left. Cam Ward, in his all-black suit, with his U of Miami pin on him, in front of the Heisman Trophy step and repeat, he said, "If Joe Shane wants me, he knows best. The tape says it all. You'll get a competitor out of me. I'll stay in New Jersey all day, every day. It's too much out here. I'll just focus on making plays for the Giants." He's saying, "I'll stay in New Jersey. I won't even enter the city. Shador's got to go to the city to go shopping. Shador's got to go to the city to throw football with Malik Neighbors. Turn on the tape. Watch my tape." I've watched both of them play. I think Cam Ward, like, I won't say he's better than Shador, but I think, like, come on. Like, the way he had to get it out of the mud, the way he had to make it and go to Miami and become that guy, and some of those throws and some of those plays he was making early, he's just got a raw talent at the quarterback position, and I think he's going to be better for the Giants to mold versus Shador Sanders, who's very polished. I kind of got to look at their throwing motions and releases. I think I like Cam Ward's better. I don't know. It might just fall into your laps, Giants fans. Cam Ward might just be your quarterback. And not for nothing, I think he might be the better of the two. He's a little bit bigger than Shador Sanders as well. I won't say either one of them are more mobile. Neither one of them are running quarterbacks. But they both can throw the hell out of football. And I think you might just get your quarterback of the future anyway, just the way that it falls with 1-2 going Raiders, Shador Sanders, 2, Cam Ward to the Giants.
Your official station to talk Knicks. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Good evening. Your nighttime host, Keith McPherson, on The Fan, talking sports. 888-808-1019, KM. To AM, we're right back. Let's finish the show. I'm on till 12. C-Max coming up next. I mean, we've talked about... Oh, Peter Schwartz is on. That's right. Shout out to Peter Schwartz. I'm just so used to talking. I was saying earlier in the show, C-Max was going to come on and talk about how Plan B is better. But Peter Schwartz is also a Yankee fan. So I'll be listening to hear his thoughts and takes. Let's get back to you on the phone line. Bobby in Belmore, you're on The Fan. Bobby! Oh, Bobby just dropped off. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Let's go to Lewis in Pompton Plains. Hello, Lewis.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to start off by saying it's a pleasure talking to you. First time I get to talk to you, so I'm just excited.
Yeah, thanks for calling my show. Thanks for listening. Appreciate it.
All right, so I've always been a Yankee fan, and I actually didn't like the Soto trade to begin with, only because I don't believe, no matter how talented someone is, you should trade five players for a rental player.
Mm.
And I'm also happy that Plan B is what we're going with, because the Yankees, listen, if we're being honest with ourselves, would Soto make our team better from a one-player perspective? Yes, but we have too many holes on the team to sign a player for $50 million. And if they would have signed them, you would have got the Brian Cashman spiel of how we're a world championship, we're a World Series team. We just didn't win because game one, the bullpen blew it. Game five, it was errors. We would be going back to L.A. with a 3-2 lead, and all he would have done was just sign Soto. Maybe we would have done the Devin Williams trade still. But overall, I just feel like if we wouldn't went the Soto route, we would have a mess of a team. And I don't know. That's just my take on it.
We'll never know, but I'm cool with it. We can't change the past. But I like how you went back to the past and talked about giving up Michael King, Kyle Higashioka, Drew Thorpe, Yorbit Vivas, Randy Vasquez, Johnny Brito.
Yes, listen, I will say this, though. I don't look at it that way. It's more so Michael King, yes, I think he's great. I didn't really want to give him up. But it's also Drew Thorpe. I really like Drew Thorpe. But if you look at it, they used Drew Thorpe as a centerpiece to get Dylan Cease.
Mm-hmm.
So we essentially could have had Dylan Cease and Michael King.
Nah.
For 1 year.
I always say they don't. They wouldn't have done the same trade with Cashman and the Yankees that they do between the White Sox and the Padres.
I agree, but we lost the World Series, so it doesn't matter that we made it. I don't know. I've been a Yankee fan since I was born in 91.
Yeah.
To me, it doesn't matter that they made the World Series because
matters.
But at the end of the day, like, it really does not truly matter to me. I understand for some fans it does. They may have never seen the Yankees in the World Series. I was blessed to see the dynasty eras. To me, it's just like, hey, listen, like, I want to win every year, but if we make a World Series and we lose, that's cool. But it wasn't worth giving up all these players to see somebody just walk away.
Yeah, but he wasn't the only player. I hear you, Lewis. Thanks for the call. If you were born in 91, then you weren't really old enough to watch 96, 98, 99, 2000. I'll give you 2009. And I don't know when it was I got on the fan. Maybe a month after the World Series, was saying, don't let people minimize a World Series appearance. You won the pennant. You won the American League. You beat all the teams that were in front of you to get to the Fall Classic and be the last two teams standing. The Yankees don't feel like they hadn't made the World Series in 15 years. You think they're looking at it as, whatever, we lost. No, they made a ton of money. I got to take my wife to the World Series. I got to go to World Series games, multiple of them. I got to experience that. I've been trying to get a Yankees hat with the World Series patch on it since 2009. Yeah, unfortunately, they lost. Someone got to lose. And you know what? They brought a lot of the mistakes and issues on to themselves. It could have went a lot differently. But also, Juan Soto isn't the only reason that the Yankees made it there. Put respect on Giancarlo's name and his postseason performance. You know, other guys, Juan Soto didn't throw a pitch. Other guys had to pitch and get those outs, right? Other guys had to make plays. Volpe, Wells, don't minimize Judge either. Jazz. Like, guys made a difference. Clay Holmes, Mark Leiter Jr., Luke Weaver. I'm blanking on a bro from the White Sox now. You know, I can't think of his name right now. Like, he should have never been on the team.
The reliever?
Yes. Tim, I'm blanking. Tim Hill. There it is. Like, Tim Hill was a huge part of the run. It had nothing to do with Juan Soto. But I'll say this, too. Juan Soto doesn't set the Yankees back. We're living in what we just saw. We just saw 162 plus a postseason run where Juan Soto was batting second. Now you have to reimagine the team. It's a philosophy change. They've already changed. They're going to be better than all right. They're going to be good. Like, it's already just with the three new players in Cody Bellinger, Devin Williams, and Max Fried. If you fill in the rest of the rotation, and if you fill in the lineup and say we're done today, I think they're still competitive. Are they better than the team with Juan Soto? I don't know. But I do think they're very competitive in the American League, and they're not done. FYI, they're not done. Down in Asbury Park, 0771-2732. Justin, you're on the fan.
What's happening, KNAN? How are you?
I'm good. Oh, thanks for calling,
listen,
man.
I hope your agent is listening, because when you finally get on TV, KNAN should absolutely be your show name. Like, that is a gold mine waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm. We got some things in the works. We've been talking about some stuff.
I hope so. So these are the guys the Yankees need. Here's what we, so, Christian Walker, first base, all right? Alex Bregman, third base. Anthony Santander, right field. And has Teoscar Hernandez been signed yet?
Teoscar's not signed. Santander's not
so
signed.
Left field, throw him out there. And then what about Shane Bieber? What's up with him?
He came back. He came back to the Cleveland Guardians, which made a ton of sense.
All right. And I need a little bit of clarity on Juan Soto. So the fact that Yanks didn't get him, was it because the fact that Howe would not give him box suites or the signing bonus? Your opinion.
You got to start with the money. It was the most money. It was the most money. It was a larger signing bonus.
Well, that's 5 mil, though. I know the signing bonus
everybody that's listened to my show over the last 2 weeks, I don't know how many calls I've taken where people say it's only 5 mil. If somebody gave me $5 million today, I might not come back to the radio. Like, $5 million is a lot of
and
money.
And one less year.
Like, yeah, but also, it's not just $5 million. It's a larger signing bonus. I think the signing bonus was like $50
well,
more.
$50 million
more.
Or the box suite.
And before we even get to the suites and the clothing allowance for his mother and the charter flights for his family and all the other, the four premium tickets, and they had a crafty contract. I don't know if it was David Stearns. I don't know who came up with it. But they basically gave him opt-outs where they're like, hey, we can make this 51 go to $55 million in a couple years and keep paying you more and more and more. They did everything to win the player, and they got him. He was always going to be a Met because the Yankees were not going to go that far. Thanks for the call, Justin. 888-808-1019. They were not going to go to those lengths. They went to $47.5 million a year, which I also think they're like, is this guy $7.5 million better per year in right field than Judge? Hell no. You know that's not. No. But you got to keep raising the offer, because this is where they're telling us the offers are. They're not telling you the specifics. They're not telling you the details of the competing offers. The Mets had a masterful offer, and they literally gave this guy a suite for premium ticket. We don't even know what else was offered to him. Steve Cohen works in investing. He's probably telling him, hey, I'll give you an extra couple million. Every year, kick me back a couple million. I'll invest it for you. You'll be a billionaire baseball player when it's all said and done. Deal. Sign. Where do I sign? 888-808-1019. Coming up next, Casamigos' big shot of the night, and it's open mic time. Whatever you guys want to talk about in the sports world, we will do. Keith McPherson on the Fan till midnight. BRB.